Welcome to Sisterhood, having conversations that matter with me, Lorianne Sheldrick, an incredible woman who support, encourage, and empower other women. While you are here, you will be supported. You will empower yourself so that you can be supportive to others and begin to fully embrace that we cannot be empowered women if we do not support those who are being disempowered. That is the magic that lies within sisterhood, and it only works if we do it together. The purpose of sisterhood is to create deep and meaningful connections with other women, have conversations that matter, because women need other women, and together we are going to be, do, and have all that we desire. It starts right here, right now, with me, my special guest, and with you. Let's begin. Welcome to the magic of sisterhood. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Sisterhood. Oh, I wish I could see you all. I wish you could be in the room when I have these, like a fly on the wall, when I have these conversations with these incredible women that I have on the show. Today, I had back Shulamit Bar-Levtov, the entrepreneur's therapist. And we're having a conversation today about how to be positive without being toxic. I wanted to have her on the show because I was feeling a little anxiety about episode 53, which was the solo I did on manifestation and the dark side of the manifestation industry and my beliefs that I cannot believe that we're pushing our manifestations away when we have a negative thought or we have a negative emotion. I just cannot believe that the universe is punishing us for having true, real, born with emotions. And because I was feeling the anxiousness around sharing that conversation and potentially getting some negative feedback back, I decided, you know what, I want to continue having this conversation with someone that, one, I trust, someone that I feel safe with, and also someone that does this work on herself and with her clients and has been doing this work for decades. We're in a state right now where there's a lot of things happening in the world, and we're feeling really big feels. And sometimes we will look to a teacher, a coach, spiritual mentor, whatever it may be, a book, a podcast, and they talk a lot about fixing your mindset and being a vibrational match and, you know, reaching a level of whatever 5D ascension so that you are not feeling all the feels of what's going on in the world. And one of the things that Shula and I talked about was we need to be feeling these things that are happening in the world. This toxic positivity, acting as though there's nothing happening, like we can't change anything if we act as if nothing bad is happening in the world. So Shula shares what we can do to be positive in a real way without being toxic. She shares what toxic positivity is, how we use toxic positivity methods on ourselves, what we can do and say instead to ourselves and to other people. Really, it's all about what we can do to be a human being who has tons of feels, knowing that we have spiritual guidance, but we're also human beings, and really knowing and understanding that it's not unspiritual to have emotions. So before I just send you off to listen to this conversation, I really want to share with you a little bit about Shulamit Bar-Levtov. Shula has an MA in counseling and spirituality. She's a registered social worker. She's certified in focusing nonviolent communication, tapas acupressure technique, and Kripalu yoga. like amazing. She's also certified clinical trauma professional. She's trained in assessing and teaching resilient skills. And as a coach, there's no one greater that I would want to have on my team than the entrepreneur's therapist. So truly, truly amazing to be able to talk to Shula, to be able to work with Shula, to be able to listen to Shula, like all the things. I really think you're going to really resonate with this human being. So if you want to connect with Shula, which I highly recommend, highly encourage you to do, I put all the links to connect with her in the show notes. Shula also provided me with a bunch of resources. So to help us even more, to help us dive deeper into this conversation, unpack this conversation, unpack this topic about toxic positivity even more, all of those are also in the show notes. So not only will you be given so much value and some tools in this conversation, Shula also provided us with some other resources that I've linked in the show notes for you so that you can take this information and you can actually like take action in your life today. So before we do anything, I want you to remember something really important. No matter what you're experiencing today, no matter what's happening mentally, emotionally today, no matter what you've done or said or how you've behaved today, I want you to remember this really important thing. You are good enough. You have always been good enough, and you will always be good enough. Period. I'm sending you so much love wherever you are in the world. Enjoy this conversation, and I'll see you back here next time. Bye. So just a little, first of all, welcome Shula to Sisterhood again.
Thanks, Lorianne. It's always so much fun to hang out with you.
I love these conversations, and we always put so much into like 45, 60 minutes that we're just like, God, I can't even imagine what we could do with 5 hours. And yes. So I've been doing a deep dive lately into some of the harmful things that are said and taught in the manifestation coaching industry, because mm-hmm. this has been something that it makes sense. The pandemic hit in 2020, a lot of financial fears. What better way to market yourself in an industry than to use someone's fears? You know, some well-meaning and some against them. The ones who are well-meaning, I'm not talking to about those people. It's about those who are using harmful techniques. So I thought, who better than to have a conversation with Shula about our mindset and toxic positivity and how we can recognize it and what we can do in a healthy way to take care of our mental and emotional health, so that anyone who's feeling really overwhelmed right now, trying to control every thought because a manifestation coach told them that every thought they're thinking is manifesting. I always laugh at that. I'm like, I should call all my exes and be like, I'm really sorry that you met with that unfortunate fate. Because I thought about it, right? So right now, I'm sure you've noticed people are reaching out for support and advice and compassion, and they're getting just blanket statements like hustle more or do whatever it takes or just fix your mindset or stop making excuses. Are you seeing this in your world as well?
I haven't noticed any difference, but that's because it's always been bad. That's my impression of it. It has always been a dominant thread running through what I see online and in advice, business advice columns, personal help advice columns, you know, that are missing a nuanced approach. That's what they go for, is the simple, well, just do this or just do that, you know, replace one with the other.
Yeah.
And that's just always been a theme.
It's always been a theme. Yeah, I think because I came from corporate, which is the hustle culture, straight into coaching, I never had like a real middle where I was seeing it. I was just, it was always the same story. Like even when I came into the coaching industry, I was seeing the same story. And I mean, that was a decade ago. So it's not, you know, we're not having the conversations openly online the way we are today. So I never saw it the way that I'm seeing it now. And it's probably not because it wasn't there. It was just, I went from one right into another. That was the exact same thing that we were being told, right? You just have to like reach for higher goals. You just have to hustle more. You just have to work harder. You just have to make less excuses, or you just have to be more grateful for what you have. And it's like, I am grateful for what I have. And I'm really scared. I just lost my income, right? Yeah. I just lost my revenue. What do I do in that? So yeah. In a place where we need understanding and support, we're just saying, okay, so you lost your job, you lost your revenue, whatever it is that's affecting you. And now all you need to do is replace it with this positive mindset. But that
all, she says with air quotes, all you need
all
to do.
You have to yes. do is change your mindset. Yeah. And I started to see just how toxic that was becoming to myself. And then I started to hear the term toxic positivity. So what is toxic positivity? So that people don't think that there's anything wrong with being positive.
Right. Yes. So the way I understand toxic positivity is positivity that is used to shut shit down.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone's having a hard time, when someone's having a struggle, when somebody's experiencing difficult emotions, and so, for example, this is a very non-business example, but one that I think people will recognize. For example, it's a harsh example. When a child dies and somebody says to the parents, well, it's God's will.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm not anti-religious or anything like that. I do believe that there is a plan for us. And I do believe that we can't see this plan necessarily. So we don't always know what's in mind for us. But to use that as a way, even well-meaning,
yep.
right, that we want to, when someone's suffering in front of us and we want to alleviate their distress, and so we say, well, it was God's will, with the intention of comforting the person, but in fact, what it does, the impact is, it shuts down their pain and difficulty. And what would be more helpful in a situation like that is to say, that must be so hard for you, I'm so sorry, right?
Yes.
So toxic positivity, that's just one example yeah. of toxic positivity being used to shut things down. So for example, the post that you were commenting on today, which we'll link in the show notes, where Tara McMullen was writing about, about the advice being given to parents, that this parent in pain wrote into some advice giving column, and the advice that they got was do more, hustle more, which is exactly what you're saying. Yep. And again, I'm not casting aspersions on the intention of the person who wrote the column to say hustle more, do more. However, it's important to consider the impact. And someone in pain, when someone says I'm struggling and you tell them just do more, mm-hmm. again, it's that shuts down or bypasses, attempts to bypass the pain. So when somebody says to you, geez, I'm having a really bad day and I'm feeling really discouraged, and you say to them, well, just look on the bright side, blah, blah, blah. Again, it's bypassing the negative feelings and attempting to squash them
mm-hmm.
with something that is the opposite.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it's well-meaning. I think of so many times that someone's just tried to turn something around when I've been struggling with something to have me look at the bright side of it. They were really well-meaning because they didn't want me to be in pain. So it's not always that, you know, they're meaning to do you harm, but it's so important, because I have an example just, you know, in 2020, first lockdown, like I still, like, even though I'm not going to go back, when it first happened, I couldn't facilitate in-person workshops. And that was my main revenue earner. I was terrified. I was so terrified. Having something come up, like the fear, that scarcity, like it just, oh my God, like I didn't know how to process that. I couldn't future trip. So I couldn't go into the future and be like, when is this going to come back? All I knew is right in this moment, I just lost something big financially. And a lot of the comments that I received were, well, that's okay. At least your husband is still earning good money. And it's like, well, Yes, I'm very grateful for that, but I'm also still allowed to be very upset by the fact that I just lost my main revenue earner. And what if my husband were to walk out that door tomorrow? Right. So like that, those are the things that I, you know, really started to make me look into this a little bit deeper, because I'm like, God, why can't I just be sad?
Yeah.
Just let me be sad. My girlfriend experienced something the other day too, and I think it's so important. She has been grieving over a loss of someone really important in her life. They didn't pass away. They didn't die. They're still around, but she still lost them. This person is not in her life. And she's been going to a healer, and she wouldn't mind me telling this story. And she's been going to a healer, and the healer just totally bypassed this moment of grief she was feeling and just said, you know, you just have to like fix your mindset about this, because if you don't fix your mindset about this, more people are going to leave you. And
what?
Yes. And
that's horrifying.
Horrifying. And I, when I was talking to her, of course, she's just so, now she's, you know, so hurt because this person she trusted, but now she's also afraid other people are going to leave her. You know, it just brings up so much. I was like, you are allowed to grieve. This, what you are experiencing is sad. It's sad. Like, that's it. Like, you don't need to put a red ribbon on it and sugarcoat it. It is a sad experience. Whether you're going to get through it or not, doesn't matter. Of course you will. It's a sad experience.
Yeah.
Right. And at that moment, they don't think they're going to get over it. So they just need that kindness and compassion. So
they really do.
They really do. And I love the examples of what toxic positivity is, because it reminds us too, like even me, to just be careful with letting people feel their feelings.
Yes. Actually feeling your feelings is in fact the way to true positivity. And in fact, also, many of the things that people offer us are not incorrect. For example, just see the bright side, just look at the bright side. It's actually beneficial to look at the bright side, but something has to happen first before we can do that. And that's where the toxicity comes in.
Yeah.
So this feeling your feelings, having your emotions in a supportive space gives you, allows you to, like, if you think of it as food, it allows you to metabolize. You eat, you chew it up and swallow it. It has to sit in your belly for a while before the nutrients can be absorbed, and then it can be processed enough to be eliminated, right? And so there's the elimination aspect and the absorption of nutrients, both of which take time. And just around the same with positivity, that you have to have the negative, in quotation marks, negative, the unpleasant feelings need time to be metabolized, because then that's when you can make the shift. Because unpleasant feelings, they dysregulate us. They make us flip our lids. And that's not necessarily a bad thing in all circumstances. Sometimes we have to really do have to have the emotional experience. But when we give the emotional experience time and space, it subsides on its own and our lid comes back on again. And that's then when we can engage our creative thinking, our problem solving, and turn our attention toward, okay, what more is here?
Mm-hmm.
And the more includes the rest of the picture, which is possibly in one, in some circumstances, the bright side, right?
Yeah. And you don't know that when you're in that, I call it.
No, you don't.
Middle. You don't know that when you're in the messy middle. You can remind yourself from experiences before, right? And you try to do that, but it's still so important to feel those feelings. I just took a month off in February from my business because I was so upset about everything. I just couldn't, all the anger, it was like, it was just building up and building up and building up. And when I took a month long hiatus off and I just allowed myself to feel my feelings. And the reason why I took a hiatus was because that anger, I didn't want to mask it. And I didn't want to show up for my clients or online or anywhere where I put myself from an angry state. I didn't want to do that.
You didn't want to bleed on people until you got.
And what I realized was it turned into a pressure cooker moment because I had been bypassing it since March 2020.
Oh, snap.
Solution mode. I went right into solution mode and I was like, I don't need, I felt, of course, upset by everything that was going on, but I don't need myself to do anything. I just need to keep showing up. I just need to keep supporting other people and then it will go away. So bypass, bypass, bypass. And all the while I have this anger brewing in there, but it didn't start as anger. That's not where it usually, you know, begins. It starts with something really small that had I just paid attention to it in that moment, maybe it wouldn't have turned into this pressure cooker moment where I needed a month off. But when I was in it, even though I knew I was going to one day stop being so angry, in that middle, I was like, this is it. This is my state. Like, I'm going to feel like this forever. And I just kept allowing myself to feel the feelings, not by myself though. I did get support. And I think that's well, and so that's, important.
It is so important because part of what can help us, being alone with intense emotions, especially intense, uncomfortable emotions, can be frightening.
Yeah.
And one of the issues around the pandemic that was so difficult for people was that we were having these intense emotions and we were, for the most part, alone with them.
Yeah.
Because either we were isolated or everybody around us was going through the same thing and there was no support available, right?
Yes.
And when you're on your own with intense, negative, uncomfortable emotions, that it becomes overwhelming and we can't do any good processing. We kind of sink, yeah, right? So that's why it is so important to have company, safe company. And that could be professional company from a therapist. It could be from a coach who knows who's an emotion sensitive, emotion wise coach like you. It could be a pastor. It could be a good friend who's an emotionally sensitive friend, but the company really matters in the metabolization process. For sure. Because just to repeat what I said, if you don't get the support, then you are overwhelmed and then you sink.
Yeah. That's how I started to feel. And had I gotten support right from the beginning, I still could have felt those very real feelings, but they wouldn't have felt like they were taking control of me,
yes,
or affecting my decisions and my actions and my responses. That's when it became really harmful to me. But I was using toxic positivity on myself. I think that now I can recognize that I was saying to myself, well, just be grateful that this isn't happening. Just be grateful that this isn't happening. Just be grateful you have this. And I remember being on a walk one day with one of my best girlfriends. And I was like, I am so grateful for all of that. But like, here are all the things I'm not grateful for right now, right? Like, and I want to be given the safe space to just be able to not be grateful for that right now.
Yeah.
While still knowing, of course, I'm so happy about all of these other things. And of course, I love gratitude and I love my gratitude practices. And I love all my practices, but I still have to be able to feel my feelings.
Yeah. And this, I think, is the toxic aspect of toxic positivity, is the harm it causes to the things that need to have their life. They need to have their expression. And the assumption that actually negative emotions are actually negative,
mm-hmm,
should not be felt and are bad and will do bad things to us. That's an aspect of the toxicity that's inherent in toxic positive attitudes, right?
Absolutely. I see it a lot in when someone starts a business or when someone has a big goal and they hire a coach that's in the manifestation world. And in that new age kind of rhetoric, a lot of it is, you know, your mindset is your every single thought you think creates your reality, or if you're not a vibrational match, that thing you want can't come. And if
talk about blame the victim,
all right. And all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, negative thought. I just pushed away my thing. And then it's really hard to show up in your business when you're in a constant state of trying to manically control every single thought and emotion that floods through you throughout the day. Because as you know, like, you're an entrepreneur as well, it's a lot of stuff that comes through in and out of your mind all day,
yep,
right? There's moments, and then there's so many good moments too, but it's so hard to express sometimes to people to just stop believing that every single thought you think is going to happen. Just because you think it doesn't mean it's like instantly going to happen. And just because you have a negative emotion doesn't mean you're pushing away this manifestation. Like, we're human beings. I like to believe that we live in a wonderful, vast, you know, unlimited universe that isn't punishing us for being human.
and right. having very normal thoughts and feelings about sometimes things. Yes. Like I go down the worry trap of things that I don't even know are going to happen. And sometimes I'm worrying about real things that are happening to real people. Right. So yeah. What do we do when, as an entrepreneur, as a human being, just trying to live this, you know, trying to live our lives, what do we do with the thoughts in our mind that are just like constantly on repeat so that they don't affect our emotional state and they don't inform our decisions and our actions and our responses, but still we can pay attention to the fact that they are happening without bypassing them?
Yeah. Well, there's kind of what's coming to me right this moment is that there are two categories of thoughts. There are worry thoughts and there are self-critical thoughts. Those are the most bothersome, I think. Would you agree?
Yeah.
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 So there's a different tactic for each of them. So I'll start with the worry thoughts. The thing is that if we're entrepreneurs, worrying is kind of our superpower. Right? Anticipating problems and planning for them, being ready for them, being prepared. Like, I mean, that's part of the definition of being an entrepreneur. That's what you have to do in business is identify what the risks are and make a plan for it. Right?
Yep.
So when you're finding yourself having unhelpful worry thoughts that are on loop, mm-hmm. right? The very first step is recognizing, oh, there are my worry thoughts. You know, you can say that's my worry voice, that's my worry self, those are my worry thoughts, whatever, but just acknowledge what's happening. Oh, right, worry thoughts. That alone kind of gets you out of the soup of, like, you're drowning in the soup of worry thoughts and believing them. Mm-hmm. The moment you say, oh, that's worried thoughts, suddenly there's you looking at the worried thoughts, right? Yep. So that would be the first thing. Love the second thing would be to say something like, oh, hi, worried self. Thanks for showing up. I know that you're like my superpower, that you have a good reason for being here. 'Cause it is important to pay attention, mm-hmm. right? And I know you're just here to help me. That's what you want from me, is for me to pay attention so that we don't get caught unawares and end up in trouble, right? And you have good reason to worry because this is a risky business. Mm-hmm. So there's two. So first of all, acknowledging. Second of all, validating. You have good reason to worry. And third, kind of an appreciation, like, oh yeah, like, yes, you have good reason to worry. And of course you're here because you're here to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can say, thank you so much. I got this. Not thank you so much. Go away. I'm making a gesture with my arm. I'm kind of opening my arm, like as if to put it around the shoulders of another person. You can kind of even physically you can make your arm go like this, but mentally you can kind of like put your arm around their shoulder and say, hey, thanks. I got this.
I love that. It's a really, like, I do that when I'm in fear. I'll talk to fear. I'll go yes. for a walk out in nature. And I'm like, I love it. I know that you are there because your job is to keep me safe, but I'm okay. I'm okay. This isn't a life or death situation. This is actually a really good, you know, experience that I get to experience, or a really good opportunity. I've got it. I've got it. I promise I'll take care of us.
I
have that conversation with me. Like, I can take care of this. Yeah.
Yes. 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 You're not alone in this. I'm taking care of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I always imagine that fear is like a little child and I am the mother and I get to soothe it. Right. Even though its job is to keep me safe. It's also my job to keep it safe as well. So, and I always love to do it out in nature because I just feel so protected by nature somehow.
Right. Nature is so resourcing. Mm-hmm. The outdoor world is very resourcing. Yeah.
It's also a really good place to just spew all that stuff that, you know, we're so afraid to say out loud sometimes because we're always told to think positive and have positive thoughts. And that's the way to, you know, to success is to always be happy and joyful and to have positive thoughts. And it's like, it's just one emotion. And endless. What do we have? Like 150 emotions. I don't know how many there are that they've actually put labels on, but it is a slew of them. So to imagine that we're only going to experience joy. I mean, that would be so lovely, but as someone—
But not human.
That's not human. Yeah, that's not human. Absolutely. I think too, you know, the toxic positivity is so easy because it sells a promise, you know, when we're, especially in the marketing world, in the business world.
It's aspirational. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. Like it's just, you see all these really successful people and they're just always, they just seem always so happy. And it's like, they're selling that promise to you as well, that this is what success looks like and no messy middle.
Right. This is, I think, a really important thing to be aware of when we're engaging in social media. And I do want to say, like, I love the social aspect of social media. I'm not anti, you know, I love the interactions that I have with the people I have because I curate my feed carefully. That's also an important thing to say, right? Is to have good boundaries. But it's important, even when you have good boundaries and even when you've curated your feed carefully, you can still end up when you're on social media feeling inadequate because social media is designed that way. Mm-hmm. It is designed to elicit that feeling from you. It's the way it works. So when you're in that space, to be awake to that phenomenon and to say to yourself, oh, wait a minute, I'm feeling kind of like I'm noticing the not good enough story. Right. Even if it's my best girlfriend and she's doing great, but I'm not. I mean, I'm happy for her, but I'm having a struggle. And so I compare myself to her. It's an innate thing. And then I shit on myself for not doing as well as she did, even at the same time as I'm joyful for her. Yes. So to really be aware, first and foremost, that both of these platforms, well, all social media platforms are set up on purpose to make us feel vulnerable, to elicit that vulnerable state from us where we're feeling like we're not good enough, so that we are primed for the next ad, paid ad, that sells us the solution to the very problem the platform has created.
Yeah.
Right? And knowing that that's happening is a powerful way to be able to be in choice then around what you do.
Yes. That's why I wanted to have these conversations. That's why I'm having the conversations online around the industry of something,
yeah.
I'm getting a lot of, you know, pushback from the spiritual community, and I get it because like they hear the word like manifestation coaches and they're thinking, oh my God, don't attack the spiritual community. And it's like, spiritual isn't a man-made profit center. Like spiritual is just like in us. Right. So, I forgot where I was going with
that. So it's not spirituality that you have a problem. It's not spirituality you have a problem with. It's the commercialization of spirituality.
Yes. So like saying, you know, oh, so many of you just lost your jobs. You're probably so terrified right now that you're never going to earn another income. I have the 17-second magical fix for you. All you have to do is pay me $2,999, but don't worry, the universe is going to give it back to you. But if the universe doesn't give it back to you, it's because your mindset was the problem. You have unconscious thoughts that are still blocking you from receiving it. You don't feel abundant enough. You don't feel worthy enough. And it's like, well, no, sometimes there's just a bunch of things in that middle that I need to do. Like, where are the action steps that we have to take in that 17-second ritual that I just paid $3,000
for? Right, exactly. So there's an interesting saying, trust in God, but row away from the rocks.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's important. And in fact, there's a nuance here that I want to talk about around this idea that negative thoughts draw negative things to us, because I think it's important. It's an important key. And you probably know this from the work that you do, that the human brain has a negativity bias.
Mm-hmm.
It has a bias in favor of negative information because evolutionarily speaking, in order to survive, we needed to know where the danger was. And so the brain retains the danger information and dismisses out of hand anything that is not related to danger and survival. So the example I always use is the bear and the bunny. The bunny needs to know where the bear poop is. It doesn't need to know where the flowers are, because if it doesn't know where the bear poop is, it's going to accidentally wander into the bear's territory and get eaten. If it misses the flowers, it's not going to die from missing the flowers.
it's just going to miss the flowers. And the human brain is the same. So our job, if all we go with is the negative, I'll interrupt myself. I'll get to our job in a second. If all we go with is the negative, then the brain's negativity bias feeds us ongoing more and more negative information so that all we see is the negative. We are inadvertently screening out the rest of the story. And so the idea is not to crush the negative with the positive, but to learn to hold both. And so training your mind to see the rest of the story, the information about danger, but also the information about joy and beauty and connection and safety and all the good and nourishing things that happened. Because those are the things, as humans, not mammals, as humans, those are the things that give us what we need to be able to face the danger. If all we see is the negativity bias, there, like, then it just depletes us.
Yeah.
So there is a danger if we don't learn, if we don't train our brain to retain the positive information that we receive, it will feel like we're drawing negative to us because the mind's negativity bias just naturally goes in that direction. Mm-hmm. So there is work to be done around learning to hold both and cultivating the brain's capacity to see what's good. So like gratitude practice, for example, like you talked about, is a really powerful way to do that. And I don't know if you have noticed how traditionally gratitude practice, you're supposed to make a list, right? But I don't know if you've noticed this. I sure did when I first started in gratitude practice, that the tendency is you make that list and you look at what you're feeling like crap and you think, I should make a gratitude list so that I'll feel better. And you make a list of all the things you should be grateful for, like that you have a roof over your head and money to pay your bills. You get to the bottom of the list, you're not feeling any better. And in fact, you're feeling like a shit because you're feeling ungrateful. You can't feel grateful for these things. Yeah. And then you beat yourself up.
Absolutely.
That's not the way to do a gratitude practice. The way to do a gratitude practice, well, I'm sure you have also ways, the way I teach to do it, is that at the end of the day, you look back on the day for something that you appreciated.
Yeah.
Right? And you take a moment to revisit that experience that you appreciated. You put yourself back in the time and place. You notice the environment. You notice what you were smelling, what you were thinking, all that, all the senses, right? The real sensory, you re-immerse yourself in the sensory experience. And then you say, oh, like, oh, I feel the appreciation for that. And then if it feels right, you can say, and I feel grateful.
Yeah.
And that's how you're engaging that experience of gratitude. You're noticing the positive thing and cultivating the emotional experience around it so that it stays with you.
Yes. I love that.
And the more you do that, the more you overcome your negativity bias and train your brain to see, so that then in the course of the day, you will, your practice of gratitude will pop up and you'll be like, oh, I really appreciate that. I'm grateful. Right? And it starts to happen on its own in the course of your day that you begin to see more than just the negative.
Absolutely. And I think that's it right there. It's that beautiful balance of both. And I teach the gratitude practice the same way. I'm like, enough with the shoulds. We already know we should be grateful for all these things, but that's not what you're feeling when you're deep in it. So I do the same thing. It's like, what can you just appreciate right now? Because appreciation is just another way of expressing gratitude. So like when I'm like deep in it and I go for my nature walks, because that's where I do everything, that's where I give everything, I'm just like, I appreciate that I'm just here, literally just walking here right now. And I have a place to throw all this anger at without it coming back to me. And that helps me so much. And then I'm like, and then I'll just start talking. I talk out loud because I'm in the forest by myself, so who cares? And I'm talking out loud. And as I'm talking, I'm like, yes. And I also appreciate this tree. And I also appreciate this. And all of a sudden I can feel my nervous system calm.
Yes.
Still feeling all the very normal feels of what I was feeling before, but it's not so heightened. It doesn't feel like it's taking control of me anymore. Like I'm going to be in this forever. And I can, and I'm kind of in both. I'm really feeling both. And then I start to see more things. So it really is important that we don't just shut out all the bad stuff or shut out all the good stuff. We need both.
Yeah.
Right. We need both. That's so important, but it's just those little practices that help us experience both. Yeah. Cause you do get biased when you only look at one thing. I talk about that. Like when someone posts something on social media and it's all they're looking at and it's all they click on, the algorithm even gives them more of those things, right? It's not because the universe is punishing them, because the law of attraction says you had this thought and now you're being punished for it and you're getting more things. It's like literally even our algorithm is designed to do that for us. So my feed, I do the same thing as you. I have a totally different feed now. I have a little bit of both though. Like I want to see the other stuff too, because I want to know what's going on in the world. But then I also have all those other beautiful things that I love about life that I'm following now. Like I love gardening. So now I have like 10 accounts I follow on gardening. It's no longer just about my business. And I love cute animals. So I follow that. And I follow good news stories. I follow that. So I'm just like, again, you have to cultivate that though. Like you have to go in and look for those things and follow those things so that you can give yourself something else to look at.
Yes. And mood induction, what you're talking about is a form of mood induction. We can change our mood if we immerse ourselves in sensory experiences. So for example, the puppy and the kitty videos, if you spend a few, like just a minute or two or three with those when you're feeling down, they will actually shift your nervous system to some degree. And so we can use music for mood induction. We can use videos. We can use like we can have a dance, a little like movement can also be a good source of mood induction, right? But we think that this is part of the flaws of the toxic positivity too, is it has to do with thoughts. It stays at the intellectual level. And yet we can use mood induction to induce positive or supportive states of our nervous system, the parasympathetic nervous system engagement, right? That shifts the mood so that then, as you say, the negative takes its proper place. It doesn't go away, but we become bigger. There's that and more, right?
Yes, absolutely. And all of this, you know, all of this stuff that we're talking about, the reason why we talk about this, even though, you know, we could be going and just like going right to the positive and just having you feel really good and only feeling good, we can't just talk about the feel good stuff. We also have to recognize the things that don't make us feel good, normalize it, but recognize those who are banking on us not feeling good.
Yes.
Right? So when we do go online and we go on social media, which is where so many of us are right now, we can recognize it that, oh, that was designed perfectly to like hit me right in my, you know, my scarcity or right in my sadness or right in my like comparison. And maybe for a moment, I don't open up my wallet just yet.
Yeah.
Maybe I look a little bit deeper. One question, I don't even know where it came from. I forget now. I think it was something from Brené Brown. I'm sure of it. But it was, who is profiting off of you staying in a toxic, confused, frustrated state where you're not actually getting any solutions? You're just getting a ton of band-aids that don't take you anywhere. And then you feel like a failure. And when you ask the coach or ask the teacher or whoever it is that's selling you this thing to answer your questions, they're like, you just have to do a little bit more mindset work. And it's like, I think I'm good with the mindset work.
Yeah, right.
Need new solutions now to these obstacles. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and coming back to the idea of mood induction, if you find yourself feeling disturbed like that, like you said, and you're hovering on the click on the buy now button to take some mood induction moments, to go to a different app and look at some kitties, or to just run up and down the stairs once or twice, you don't have to defer the decision for a long, long time. Or if you have a buddy, I for a long time, a friend and I, actually, you would know her, Erica Cucurow, who's a James Street writing. She's in Kempville. Okay. And she and I were supporting one another to not buy another training. And so every time we had our fingers hovering over click, what would Shula say? What would Erica say? Right. And it was a way of remembering who we really were. So that we weren't prey to the manipulation. And those are the kinds of things that help us get our lid back on so that we can think straight and make the kinds of decisions that we want to, that will serve us and not the people who are, I love how you use the word, banking on our vulnerability, because they really are, they're making bank on it for 100%.
Absolutely. And again, you know, even as I've been having this conversation so openly online, just, you know, one of the things I keep saying is it's not everyone. This is just so that we can recognize those who are doing it. We're not pointing the finger at every single person in the industry, because that would mean that I'm also saying that I'm doing it too, right? Because I'm in the coaching industry as well. But I also have a lot of room for change and growth myself, because I've also said some of these things that are toxic positivity and shared some of these things without giving it the other context, without giving it all that stuff in the middle and all the other things. And oh, by the way, I had these resources available to me too. And I had a support team and I had this. I didn't just do this one thing. And I'd like to share the full story now. But unfortunately, with sharing the full story, now I am like a long form creator, because
yes,
I have no choice, or I have to do a whole series, because I can't leave someone with just that one thing. You know, one of my friends used to always joke. She's like, you know, I love your page and I love your feed and I love the stuff you do. She's like, but it's kind of like bumper sticker, where you pass the bumper sticker and you're like, oh, that's so nice. But then you drive by and you're like, I have no idea how to incorporate that into my life. So it just is gone, right? It's just gone, because there's no context, right? There's no context to it. So yeah.
Part of that is to the value of, you know, there's a limit to self-help.
Yeah.
And self-help is important, and it lays a good foundation. That's the kind of material that we consume online. You know, I create it, you create it, but the value the true value lies in the nuance, in the application. And that's where you either get a buddy, you get professional support, you find a way to work with it, you journal on it, you reflect on it, you try it out. Those are the ways, you know, to take it another step.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so important. And that's something so often that we miss, is that we have to take action when we get the guidance, when we get the support, when we get the resources, whatever it might be. We're the ones who actually have to take action. We're the ones who have to incorporate it and see if it does work for us. So it's like, if someone shares something that really truly resonates with me, and it's like, here's some journal prompts to go deeper, like take this into your journal the next time you're doing, next time you're writing, I can be like, oh God, I loved that so much. That felt really good. And I'm going to need to do that one day, and then just let it pass by. Or I can take that, oh God, that felt so good. That really resonated with me. I need to take that deeper and actually then sit down and do the work. And then it does something different to me mentally, emotionally, physically, like taking the action to do it. Now I'm the one, right? It's not like, yes, that person was really great and they taught me this thing, but I'm the one who's actually taking it and I get to make it mine. And that just makes me feel more confident as well. And a little bit more in control, especially when I'm feeling out of control. I now have tools that I can turn to when I can't get to my coach or my therapist or whoever it is. Right. So I had a woman on the show once who said something so important, which was, you know, we were talking about eating disorders and our health. And she says, what we need to understand when someone from the diet industry, for example, is selling you something, is they're selling you the diet, telling you to literally take away all your coping mechanisms. That diet will constantly fail because they're not giving you a new coping mechanism. So what she does is she says, yes, we need to take these foods out of your diet for sure right now, but you got to replace it with a new healthy coping mechanism, right? Otherwise, the next thing you do when you get sad or you get angry or you get frustrated or you have a stressful day is you're going to look for your coping mechanism. You're instantly going to go to that. And if you have a negativity bias, that's probably what you're going to go look at, right? Are those things that feed into that feeling even more. And then that validates, see, this is why I'm meant to feel this way forever. So yeah, we need those things too, that bring us hope and make us feel good. We need new coping mechanisms, like some of the ones that you've shared, right? Like,
so I want to add a nuance to what you've just said.
Yes, please.
Because there's a principle at play here. Restriction causes binging.
Mm.
So if we're looking at eliminating things, it can be a problem. And it comes from diet culture, but it's a principle that applies across the board, that restriction leads to binging.
So I'm appreciating what you say, what you're saying about not taking away a coping mechanism without having something in its place. What I would advocate is there's a coping mechanism that is causing problems at the same time as it's helping.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to do less of it.
Yeah.
So what we want to do is expand our repertoire so that it, if we only have one thing to do and it's the thing that helps but also harms, we're going to do that 100% of the time.
Yes.
If we have 10 things, one of which is that one that helps but also hurts, and we have 10 things we can do, that one becomes 1/10 of what we do.
Mm.
So without changing it, when we expand our repertoire, we don't get caught in that trying to stop doing that. And I don't know if if you've ever heard the joke about stop thinking about pink elephants. All you can think about is pink elephants. The more you say don't do that, the more you're going to want to do it. So you leave that thing alone, add in 9 more, and suddenly it's only 1/10 instead of 100.
I love that. That to me is way more helpful, way more helpful, because every time someone's always like, what are you giving up this year? I'm like, literally nothing. I'm not giving up anything, but I will add all these things that I know will make me feel really good. And I just naturally won't go to that thing that causes me harm because I have so many of the other things. So it makes so much sense. I think we already know this deeply inside.
Yes, we do.
Right? Yeah. Yes, right. I'm like, oh my goodness, I do that. Yeah, because we just get so down on ourselves too when we do go to that thing we're supposed to be giving up. And then all of a sudden we created like whatever, I call it diet homicide. Like, you know, we eat the cake that we're told, no, don't eat the cake. And then as soon as someone tells you don't eat the cake, you're like, I could really go for a piece of cake right now.
Yes.
Right. And it's like, what's wrong with, okay, here are the 9 good things I'm bringing in. And every once in a while, I might eat the cake, right?
Yeah, so eat the cake.
I love that.
Go ahead. Yeah. Because when it's 1 of 10, it's not the only thing. It's one
not
of 10.
The only thing.
Yeah.
I think this is, it's such a helpful conversation, Shula, because we need to start normalizing that, again, we're just human beings. Isn't it funny that the conversation that so many of us are having right now is normalizing being a human being?
Yes, yes.
Like, what does it mean to be a human being when, like, I'm 43, heading into my 44th year, and I've been told more about what I should do to just, I don't know, expand into some 5D spiritual person. And I'm like, but aren't I here as a human? How do I be just a human being without and enjoying it and not having these very real emotions, you know, take me down? How can I do it all? How can I feel all the feels and still enjoy just living this beautiful human life that I get to live?
Well, I really, there's a cheesy saying that comes from the spiritual world. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. Well, if that's the case, and I happen to appreciate the meaning behind that, if it is the case that my entire purpose here is to be human, then feeling all the feels is the spiritual part of the spirituality of humanity.
Oh.
The spiritual experience of being human is having all the feels. That's at least part of the spiritual experience of being human. It's not unspiritual to have emotions. It's not unspiritual to be embodied. It's not unspiritual to be connected with yourself and also be connected with the rest of people and the universe and nature. Like, the physical world is as spiritual as the so-called spiritual world, in my opinion.
I love that. And I heard someone just this morning on Facebook have the conversation, and they were saying that while I love that sentiment and I love that statement, I think what we also, the way we should reframe it is I'm a human being having a human experience who has access to spiritual support. And I was like, oh, I love that too. Like, both of those combined.
I love that too.
So it's true. So, you know, something that I was just saying the other day, and it's like, if you believe that you're getting guidance, so not to say that the law of attraction and the manifestation coaching industry is all bad and toxic, but if you believe that by you doing this ritual, you're going to get some divine guidance, you're the one who has to use that divine guidance. Right. It's not just a matter of doing this one thing. You have to do something with it here in this physical place as a human being with other human beings in your within your life. So
yeah, it comes through you into the world.
Yeah. And that's really helped me. And it's also helped me to give a little context sometimes, or just maybe ask different questions when I'm seeing someone teaching something that is like, all you need to do to stop feeling so sad about the tragedies in the world is ascend to the 5D. And it's like, I'm sorry, there's nothing that I can do while I'm a human being to not be sad about the tragedies in the
world. We are supposed to be sad.
Yes.
We are supposed to be sad about things that are sad.
Exactly. I'm sorry, when I see terrible things happening to children, animals, human beings, I'm going to cry. And there is no spiritual practice out there that I want to do that will take away that empathy, because my empathy is my superpower. Even right. though sometimes it's very distressing, I have the tools and support that I know now that I need to turn to when I'm feeling that way, so I don't take up permanent residence in it and I can get out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I want to have these conversations, because people are afraid to think and feel right now. They're so afraid to think and feel. I'm going to think the wrong thing. And I went for a walk with my girlfriend one day and she was kind of like just venting. And she was like, oh, I have all these negative thoughts and this is what I'm doing. And she stopped and she was like, oh, control, alt, delete. I'm like, what are you control, alt, deleting? Didn't that just feel good? That you were venting to someone. I wasn't adding on to it. I was like, God, get it out. Get it out. Look where we are. Get it out. Yeah. And she was like, yeah, but if I have this goal that I want, I'm not going to get it if I stay in this vibration. And I'm like, oh my God.
Well, part of getting rid, like again, part of getting, if we go back to the metabolism, yes. like part of metabolizing things is having a good poop.
When right? I eat, yes, it doesn't matter how good or how bad the meal is, I'm going to poop it out.
Yeah. And your friend needed to poop out these things, right? She needed to eliminate them in order to be able to then go on to the next thing.
Yeah. Healthy venting, right? Like yes. I'm sure you yes. see that all the time in your practice. It's just like, okay, I know that we need to like come up with solutions to these obstacles, but right now I just need to vent about this thing. And I'm sure they all do the same thing. Oh, that feels so much better.
Right? Yes.
That feels so much better. Yeah. It would be nice if we never had that experience, of course, but that's just not realistic. Yeah, absolutely. What else can we do before I say goodbye so that I don't take up all day? Because I can talk to you.
We can keep talking about this.
So that we don't go in a shame spiral every single time we have a negative thought or emotion. What would you say to us? You know, we're just like, where is the first place we can even start with this?
I think what we've just been talking about for the past 10 minutes or so, to really to bear in mind that this is humanity. And in fact, this is a practice from Kristen Neff, N-E-F-F. She teaches about self-compassion. She's a big self-compassion researcher.
Yeah.
So this comes from her peer-reviewed and published research as a psychologist. The first step is to notice what's happening. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm having a shame spiral around my negative thinking. And then to say, ouch, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm hurting. I'm suffering. This is a moment of difficulty. And then to say, may I be kind to myself?
Mm-hmm.
It's called a self-compassion break. It's how she teaches. And really, self-compassion is the antidote to shame. It's also the antidote in a way to negativity, in that it gives us a way to be with ourselves in the pain and difficulty that we're having. So it's first of all, noticing this is hard, then saying, ouch, this hurts. And then, oh, and I forgot, there's the aspect of shared humanity. Many people feel this way. This is what it is to be human.
Yeah.
That's the part I forgot that responds to what you were saying around the humanity stuff. It's a shared humanity. So we notice what's happening. We say, ouch, many people feel this way. To feel this way is to be human.
Yeah.
This is okay. This is what it means to be human. And then to say, may I be kind to myself?
I love that. It sounds like, because it goes right back to the first, you know, practice that you shared, doing a lot of talking to ourselves, like
yes,
communicating with ourselves, right? Well, of course, we're going to be communicating that as well to the support that we're going to get, because I'm such an advocate for getting support. You're not meant to do it all by yourself. And so are you as well. This is why you do what you do. You support women in business, entrepreneurs who get caught up in that stress and hustle and burnout cycle that so many of us are taught.
Because we're stronger with support.
We're so much stronger with support. And that also means we can support ourselves in between all of that too.
Yes.
By having those conversations with yourself. We're already talking to ourselves. We just might as well change the conversation that we're having. I always say that people are like, oh my God, I feel like a crazy person talking to myself all the time. I'm like, you're literally already doing it. You just told me all the ways you were talking to yourself that's harming you. We're just trying to change the conversation you're having with yourself, have more compassion, give yourself more grace, that sometimes it's hard to be a human being. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's amazing. It's both. It's both. Yeah. And sometimes it's both at the same time. You know, my girlfriend who was, you know, going through a grieving process, she was like, I'm so happy with all of these areas in my life. And I'm so sad about this one. Mm-hmm. One doesn't cross the other one out. And she has nothing to feel guilty about when she's feeling joy. And she has nothing to feel guilty about and when she's grieving either. She gets to experience both.
Yeah.
And getting the support so that she can experience both is just a game changer.
Yeah.
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 Thank you so much for this. I so appreciate this conversation. I feel like there's probably so much I missed when it comes to toxic positivity, but I wanted to have a conversation with you, not like try to solve the world's problems with one episode.
What? You mean we can't do that?
I wish we could. I wish we could. Right. One episode, that's it. Just do this thing. All problems are solved. Yeah. Yeah, we're not making a one size fits all promise here on this podcast. Yeah. But I think one size fits all thing is really that self-compassion. Like we can all give ourselves some self-compassion, right? That is something that we can all do that would really go a long way towards the way we treat ourselves. And the way we treat ourselves affects how we treat other people. I know that just living with my husband, if I'm not treating myself well, I'm probably not treating him very well either. Yeah. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Lorianne.
I can't wait to have you back. Bye, everyone.